evening, everyone. This is Lou Caroli, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here in Maryland, it's 81 degrees. A little bit hot to my taste for this time of year. I'm recording it on the 31st day of March. You'll hear it April 2nd. Well, what do we have today? Let's begin with this little bit of medical news. This is from Fox News by Melissa Rudy, March 29th, 2026. And the title says, Cases of White Plague Rising in U.S. as Doctors Warn of Rebound Effect. A potentially deadly disease known as the White Plague has been rising in the U.S. since the pandemic, health officials have warned. Tuberculosis, TB, gets its nickname, White Plague, from the pale appearance of those affected with the disease. After a dip in 2020 with the onset of COVID, likely due to underdiagnosis and reduced screenings, according to health experts, cases of TB have increased every year since. More than 10,600 cases were confirmed in 2024, which is around 3 people for every 100,000, according to the latest available data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. This marks the third consecutive annual increase, and the total 2024 case count is the highest annual number since 2013. Despite the recent increase, TB rates in the U.S. remain comparatively low compared to many parts of the world, as the global average is about 131 cases per 100,000, as compared with only 3 in the U.S. And that according to the World Health Organization. And that's approximately 40 times higher than the global. The global is 40 times higher in comparison to the U.S. TB, tuberculosis, is a curable bacterial infection that targets the lungs, but can also infect other organs, according to Johns Hopkins. It's spread through airborne particles released when an infected person coughs, speaks, or sneezes. Renuga Vibhakanandan, MD, professor at Creighton University School of Medicine, and VP and CMO of Chai Health Physician Enterprise Midwest, said the rise in tuberculosis cases in the U.S. is concerning, but noted that it was foreseeable. The doctor said, quote, the COVID-19 pandemic effectively disrupted TB surveillance and treatment programs across the country. And the doctor is board certified in internal medicine and infectious diseases. And she was telling this to Fox News Digital. The doctor continued saying, what we're seeing now is largely a rebound effect. Latent TB infections that went undetected or untreated during the pandemic are now activated, unquote. I'll just mention that I guess it's been about 30 years ago now. I believe it was in 1991, my father-in-law passed away. And although he had no obvious symptoms, they found out when they did the autopsy that he had a latent case of TB. So my wife and I had been to visit him, and of course his wife and son also had to be tested for TB. We had to go to the local health department and have a TB test. And luckily it turned out to be negative for all of us. Now, continuing with the article, another factor is the return to international travel and increased migration from countries where TB is more prevalent, according to the doctor. The uptick has also strained healthcare systems. Local and state public health TB programs became understaffed during the pandemic, and that capacity has not fully recovered. Now, the next section is on symptoms of the disease. While around 25% of people have likely been infected with a TB bacteria, about 5% to 10% will go on to develop active disease, according to health agencies. with a latent infection that's been infected with the bacteria, but the bacteria are not active in the body. While latent stage TB is not contagious, it can develop into active disease in 5% to 10% of people. Only people with active TB disease in the lungs or throat can spread the infection. Those who get sick with TB may experience mild symptoms, including coughing, chest pain, fatigue, weight loss, weakness, fever and night sweats, per the CDC. And in some cases, however, the disease can also affect the kidneys, spine, skin, and brain. Dr. Matsui Kawamura, a former TB control director in San Francisco and a tuberculosis clinician, previously told Fox News Digital, quote, TB can affect any organ of the body, but it causes disease in the lung in over 80% of cases. This is dangerous because it causes cough, and that's the mechanism of airborne disease. And that was the end of the quote. In more severe cases, patients may cough up blood, noted Dr. Kawamura, who serves on the board of directors of Vital Strategies, a global public health organization. And she added, often there are minimal symptoms for a long time, and people mistake their occasional cough with allergies, smoking, or cold they can't shake off. The good news is that TB is both preventable and treatable, Vivekanandan said. And the quote continues, people who are at higher risk, including those born in or traveling to high TB burden countries, individuals living in crowded conditions, or those who are immunocompromised should speak with their doctor about TB testing, unquote. Another high-risk group includes people who have diabetes, are malnourished, use tobacco, and or drink excess amounts of alcohol. Babies and children are also more vulnerable to the disease. Doctors typically use a skin or blood test to detect TB infection, followed by imaging of sputum, that is mucus testing to confirm active disease, per the CDC. The disease is treated with antibiotics that are taken every day for 4 to 6 months, the CDC states. Some of the most common antibiotics include isoniazid, rifampicin, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol. Failure to take the complete course of medications can cause the bacteria to become drug-resistant, which means it does not respond to standard antibiotics. Drug-resistant TB is more difficult and costly to treat and requires longer, more complex medication regimens, according to experts. If TB goes untreated, it is fatal in about half of its victims. That's a shock. That's me commenting now. I did not know that. Although I do know that a number of famous people in history died of it. Emily Bronte, the author of Wuthering Heights, died of what was then called consumption because the body would be consumed. They would lose weight, typically, and it was just the body was being eaten alive, consumed, hence the name consumption. And Edgar Allan Poe's wife died at the young age of 24. And I can remember that my own mother, who was born in 1908, had a good friend who died of tuberculosis. I would say probably my mother was in her late teens at the time, and she, from time to time, would speak about that. I think the girl's name was Alice. And this girl was another one in a case where she wasted away with the disease for quite some time. And I believe she did have a very serious cough, too. And that would have been as late as probably, well, my mother was born in 1908. So if we add, let's say, 15 to that, we're talking in the middle of the 1920s. So it was still a deadly disease at that time. And I guess it was only when antibiotics became widely used, that it was much more under control in this country. Now, finishing up the article, it says latent TB, which causes no symptoms and is not contagious, can be treated and cured before it ever progresses to active TB, which is infectious, the doctor said. Identifying, and this is part of her quote, identifying and treating latent infection is one of the most powerful tools we have for protecting both individual patients and the broader community. Unquote. And the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force recommends screening only for populations at increased risk rather than for the general population. And it has at the end, Melissa Rudy, the author, is senior health editor and a member of the lifestyle team at Fox News Digital. And this article came from Fox News on March 29th, 2026. And I was going to mention one more thing there, which has now slipped my mind. I think the old age is catching up to me. It might come back to me, though. Let me stop and think for about 5 seconds. No, I don't think I've got it. So we'll move on. Now, a little happier article from the Washington Times. King Charles III is to make a state visit to the U.S. in April to mark America's 250th birthday. Britain's King Charles and Queen Camilla. Now, that's a caption for a picture that, unfortunately, I can't transmit to you over the radio. Just talking about them at a greeting with the Nigerian president. This was by Jeff Murdoch in the Washington Times, Tuesday, March 31st. King Charles III will make a state visit to the United States in late April, Buckingham Palace announced Tuesday, as the British monarch seeks to repair the UK's fractured relationship with the US following the Iran war. Buckingham Palace said Charles and his wife, Queen Camilla, will make the long-planned trip to mark the 250th anniversary of the US winning its independence from British rule. The couple will also travel to Bermuda after their U.S. visit. Buckingham Palace said in a statement, quote, "Their Majesty's program will celebrate the historic connections and modern bilateral relationship between the U.K. and the United States," unquote. The trip will be Charles's first state visit to the U.S. as king, though he visited 19 times when he was the Prince of Wales. It will be the first state visit by a British monarch since 2007, when Charles' mother, Queen Elizabeth II, made her fourth trip to the U.S. President Trump made a state visit to the U.K. in September, where he attended a lavish state dinner hosted by Charles and Camilla. Prince William and his wife, Catherine, Princess of Wales, also attended the dinner. Charles's visit to Washington comes at a tense time for the U.S.-U.K. relations, strained by the Iran war. Mr. Trump has been very critical of Prime Minister Keir Starmer, his reluctance to join the U.S.-Israeli attack on Iran, though the U.K. is allowing the U.S. to use its bases for defensive operations. Well, let me just jump down a little bit. The two leaders' differences, that is the Prime Minister, not the King, and Mr. Trump, their differences over the war threaten to rock what has been a historically close alliance between the U.S. and Great Britain. Mr. Trump said last week that the rift with Mr. Starmer will not impair Charles's visit, referring to the British monarch as a friend and a quote, great gentleman. It says also that the visit could put Charles in a difficult situation. If there is a public portion of his meeting with Mr. Trump, he could face questions about British and American journalists, or from British and American journalists, about his brother, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, who was under police investigation for misconduct over his ties to deceased sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. All right, so we're going to be on the watch for that. I'm sure there'll be a lot of TV coverage when that time comes. It doesn't It doesn't seem to give an actual date for that. Maybe that has not yet been announced. Okay. If you are listening, and if you've been a listener for quite some time to this program, you know that we are on various venues. You can hear us Thursday evenings on WWCR.com. If you listen on the internet, Worldwide Christian Radio, just check their schedule. And they have several transmitters, so pick the one that it gives this program as a listening, The Divided Kingdom. And there are other venues, of course. You can go to our archives at our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, DividedKingdomRadio.com. Just click the archives, either the tab, if it's a computer at the top, or look down, if it's a cell phone, smartphone, and you can listen to any program in the last several years, in fact. So, lots of ways you can listen. You can also hear a repeat of this program Saturday mornings. Now, if you listen on short wave, the frequency for Thursday evening at 8 o'clock, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, is 4.840. Saturday mornings at 8 a.m., the frequency is 7.490. So there are multiple ways you can hear the program. And if you want to write to me, I love to get letters. Haven't got many lately. Got some good contributions. That's what helps to keep the program on the air. Frankly, I do not have the money to finance this program anymore. There was a time that I did, but now things are kind of tight. But several very kind listeners are helping to keep the program on the air, and I thank those listeners immensely for their help. And if you would like to help or just want to make some comments, just kind of keep in touch with me, write to Lou, L-O-U, Caroli, can you spell that? C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y. And the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, just like the Bethlehem in the Bible, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. And I'll repeat that at least once more during the program. So if you didn't get that, get some paper handy, and you can take that down the address. Well, remember Kamala Harris? Yeah, we remember her. She didn't do too well in the last election. But it seems like she might be running again. So here's an article from the Western Journal, dated March 30th. That would have been Monday. By Nick Givas, or Givas, G-I-V-A-S. The title says CNN. Now, I don't listen to CNN much because they're a little too far to the left for my taste. But this seems pretty good. CNN alum drops blunt warning on Harris 2028 run. Quote, very bad, unquote, news for Democrats. CNN alumnus Chris DeLisa, I guess is how you pronounce his name, I don't recall hearing that before, but he must have been on CNN since they say CNN alumnus. Chris DeLisa said former Vice President Kamala Harris is likely mounting another White House run. And he explained how that would be what he called very bad news for Democrats. Late last week on his podcast, entitled So What, Talisa warned about the potential damage Harris could do to the Democratic Party if she runs for president again. He said, quote, I think this is a bad thing for the Democratic Party, that she appears to be moving closer to running. I think that she, based on the polling, would start the race as the front runner. He added, notice I focused on start the race as the front runner. But I think that the Harris people, or Harris herself, will learn the wrong lesson from that. Or has already learned the wrong lesson from that. the laser continued. And by that, I mean this. She will look at that and say, I'm in first place. Why wouldn't I run? It's my nomination to lose, unquote. His comments came after CNN reported that Harris is scheduled to appear at Democratic events in four southern states next month. The former vice president's publicity tour for her book, 107 Days, received negative press after it was discovered that she was using California Highway Patrol officers to service her personal security. This is Lou speaking. I didn't know that. I must be out of touch when it comes to Kamala Harris. But going on, California gubernatorial candidate Steve Hilton, a Republican, said if elected, he would rescind the protection, which he called a, quote, corrupt freebie, unquote. About 1 week later, Harris announced she was canceling several stops on the tour, according to KCRA-TV. The Lisa explained, quote, in the one general election she ran on the national level, she lost to Donald Trump, a deeply flawed candidate. So number one, I just don't think in candidate skills when it comes to being able to reach across the aisle and get voters who are not already hardcore Democrats, I don't think she has a great record of doing that, unquote. So Lisa also continued that, or rather concluded, that Harris would steal attention from other potential Democratic nominees if she ran again, and that she would make former President Joe Biden's mental and physical decline a main talking point of the election. And here's another quote from Solisa. Democrats will spend at least some of 2027, maybe most of 2027, re-litigating the Joe Biden years in the White House. Because the way that Kamala Harris loses the race, and the way I think she will lose the race, is to not have a good answer for why didn't you see what was going on with Joe Biden physically and mentally? Or if you did see it, why didn't you say something? Unquote. Now, Harris has said repeatedly, every time I interacted with him, he was totally fine. But in retrospect, you know, maybe it was too big a risk. Unquote. And then he goes on to say there is no way her Democratic primary opponents are going to let her get away with that. Josh Shapiro, the governor of Pennsylvania, who will definitely run for president, has already made clear that Harris and Pete Buttigieg, who is the Secretary of Transportation, will have to answer for the role they played in covering up Joe Biden's physical and mental well-being. And Mr. Solisa goes on, now, cover up is probably too strong a word, but why didn't they say more? Why didn't they notice more? Why didn't they say more if they did notice? If Harris is in the race, and she is the front runner in the race, I guarantee you, everyone else, with the exception of Buttigieg, will go after her on, quote, you're tied to an unpopular administration. Unquote. Even Democrats don't want to go back to the Biden administration. That was from the Western Journal, March the 30th. Okay. Have you filed your taxes yet? I haven't. Shame on me. But I might have to pay a little bit. Hopefully not as much as in the past. I'm having a little bit more taken out, and I'm earning less. That is to say, since my wife's death, no longer have the two incomes from hers and mine. But where there's money to be made, there'll be scams to make it. So here's an article from USA Today, March the 28th, 2026, entitled, Don't Fall for These Common Tax Scams in 2026. The IRS warns. And it sums it all up with 3 points. First point, the IRS publishes an annual Dirty Dozen list to warn taxpayers about common scams like phishing and ghost tax preparers. Second point, scammers often use personal information found on data broker websites to make their fraudulent messages seem more credible. And third point, if you receive a suspicious call, email, or text claiming to be from the IRS, do not provide personal or financial information and avoid clicking links or downloading attachments. So that, you see, is a very quick summary of what's in this article. Good article from USA Today, but it is so long I can only give you a few of the high points. But you can find it again by going to USA Today, do a little search on their website for the March 28th article, Don't Fall for These Common Tax Scams, etc. So what are the 10 common IRS tax scams? The first one is phishing and smishing scams. Never heard of smishing. Phishing, by the way, as some of you probably already know, is spelled P-H. Not F, but P-H-I-S-H-I-N-G. Just to give a quick summary of a few of these, one of the most common tax scams involves fraudulent messages designed to look like official IRS communications. These scams can arrive by email, that's called phishing, text message, called smishing, or even direct messages on social media. Messages often use alarming language and may include links or QR codes that lead to fake websites made to resemble IRS login pages. Victims are then prompted to, quote, verify, unquote, their identity, claim a refund, or update their tax account information, all of which can expose sensitive data. Now, time is such that I just can't read all of this. It's a very good article. I'll just read a couple of the gut checks. They call them gut checks. In other words, the essence of it. And it says the IRS generally contacts taxpayers by mail first. If you receive an unexpected message claiming to be from the IRS, do not click links or download attachments. Then we have IRS phone scams, where they call you up on the phone, say, we're from the IRS and you better get some money to us quick or else. And they may say you owe back taxes. They may pressure you to make a payment immediately to avoid penalties, legal action, or arrest. Now, the gut check is the IRS does not demand immediate tax payments over the phone. Beware. Then there can be fake charity tax scams. Tax scammers also often take advantage of natural disasters, major news events, or humanitarian crises by promoting fake charities. These schemes may involve entirely fraudulent organizations or individuals impersonating legitimate nonprofits in order to collect donations and personal information. The gut check says before donating, verify the organization through the IRS tax-exempt organization search tool that I presume is on the internet. I never tried it, but beware. I get tons. I was kind enough to make some donations to some legitimate charities over the last 6 months or so, and it's a strange day if I don't get at least 4 or 5 requests for donations. Now, I think most of these are legitimate, and I'm sorry that I can't donate more. I just don't have the money. I feel bad, but what can you do? But there are plenty of these things that are not legitimate. And a lot of these are over the phone. That seems to be the big thing. I probably shouldn't say this over the air, but my cell phone so far has not been the subject of all these charitable and other claims or calls. My house phone that I still pay for with the landline, oh gosh, it gets a bunch of these every single day. Some are charities, an awful lot of them want me to get a loan, pay off some credit cards. And a lot of these are places I never heard of. One of the things I would caution about is an awful lot of the ones that leave messages for me never say who they are. They give you a number to call. Now, if it's a legitimate bank, they'll say, this is the Chase Bank, or this is Citibank, or whoever, or some M&T Bank, whatever. When they don't even tell you, I get very suspicious. I think all of you should, too. And a good social media is just ripe for tax scams. But we got to check for that one. If a tax strategy sounds too good to be true, especially if it's trending on social media, it probably is too good to be true. That's the old saying. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Then we have tax identity theft, where they steal your identity. You got to watch out for this. If you're getting a refund, especially, they don't want your identity if you're going to pay extra. But if you're going to get a refund, they're able to get your information enough that they can trick the IRS into sending out your refund to somebody else so they can cash it. Or, better still, they can be direct deposited into their account, not yours. The gut check there says if you suspect tax identity theft, report it to the IRS immediately. And consider placing a credit freeze with the credit bureaus. Then there's bogus self-employment tax credit claims. They claim they can generate large refunds for freelancers, gig workers, or small business owners. And by the way, I didn't mention that, but each of these different categories, they give warning signs. And I'm sorry that we don't have time to read all those. The gut check for that one is if one promises a large refund based on a little-known credit you've never heard of, verify the claim with a qualified tax professional first. Then the ghost tax preparers, we're going to have to skim through this quick. Those are the ones that refuse to sign the tax return. Preparers that prepare the tax for you, but they won't sign in the place provided for a professional tax preparer. And that's supposed to have a prepare a tax identification number, or PTIN. So if they don't want to sign that, that's a red flag big time. It says in the gut check, legitimate tax preparers are required to sign the returns they prepare and include their PIN number. Then another scam is some of these people that encourage you to inflate charitable deduction schemes. Some tax schemes encourage taxpayers to claim inflated deductions for non-cash donations, such as artwork, property, or conservation easements. Promoters may promise that these contributions can dramatically reduce or even eliminate the taxpayer's tax bill. And the gut check there is charitable deductions must be based on legitimate donations and accurate valuations. Inflated claims can lead to audits, penalties, and delayed refunds. And you can bet if you are audited, you better have the proof of that what you claimed is legitimate. There are a couple of others that are less common. I'm not going to bore you by reading those. But they caution you that information in this day and age is easy to get. You don't want your Social Security number to get out there. It's bad enough that you can get your name, address, phone number. Those are usually very easy to find. Names of family members, email addresses, previous addresses, you can find those on the internet for just about anybody. Also, employment history. Those things are not secret. And people attempting to impersonate you and get your money can easily get access to those things. So I guess to sum it all up, the name of the game is, when in doubt, double check. I've had calls to me, not about taxes, but about credit cards. Got one from, I forget if it was Citibank or Chase. Well, it wasn't from them. It was somebody claiming that there was a large charge in my name that they thought was fraudulent. This sounded so authentic. I almost gave them some information. But something finally told me, this guy is asking for too much. Well, I hung up after saying, I've got to verify this before I say anything more. Hung it up, called the credit card number on the back of the credit card, asked to speak to the fraud division. There was no such charge. It was all made up. They said, your account is fine. There is no questionable charge. And everything is all as it should be. So that was obviously fraud. They were trying to get personal information. Things like my social security number. Things like how much money do I have in the bank account? How much do I get every month for social security or for pensions? Those are things you do not want to give out unless you know with complete certainty that they're legitimate. Okay, enough tax stuff. Speaking of a different kind of taxes, here's something from the New York Post. Obviously, they're interested in New York City. It says, New York Dems pushing to raise corporate tax rate to bail out Mam Dhani's massive deficit. And a little subtitle says, there's a huge appetite. This is by Colin Campanile, Vaughn Golden, and Craig McCarthy, March 30th, New York Post. New York Democratic lawmakers are pushing to raise the corporate tax rate on businesses to help bail out Mayor Zoran Mamdani, who is facing a projected $5.4 billion deficit. That's with a B, not million, billion. And that's a deficit in the city budget, sources told the Post. That's the New York Post. And a source who recently met with both State Assembly Speaker Carl Eastie, Democrat of the Bronx, and Senate Majority Leader Andrew Stewart Cousins, Democrat of Yonkers, said, quote, there's a huge appetite to increase the corporate tax. It's the most popular of the menu of taxes, unquote. Democrats in Albany are willing to raise the state's corporate tax rate in order to help the mayor fund his city budget, Robert Miller said for the New York Post. And other sources said that the lawmakers were, quote, seriously discussing a corporate tax increase. Let me skip down a little bit. It says this request or this proposal is bound to put them at odds with Governor Kathy Hochul, who has been opposed to a big tax hike as she seeks re-election this year and aims to keep wealthy New Yorkers and businesses from fleeing New York City and New York State as a whole. And Stephen Fuller, president and CEO of the Pro-Business Partnership for New York City, stated, quote, some in Albany may be pushing for a political win by raising taxes just to be able to say that they hurt corporations. But the reality is that New York's economy takes the loss if we continue to raise taxes when it isn't necessary. We are forcing jobs to leave New York, as we saw with Apollo this week. And this is Lou speaking. I guess that's the corporation I'm not familiar with, but must have left New York. and that only, and continuing now with the quote, that only further deepens the affordability crisis. The governor is right to push back, and we hope she holds the line. And there's the AI. A neat copy of the New York Post. Let me see if I can see what the date was in this one. Wednesday, February, I think it's the 18th, 2026. Shows a picture of what looks like a cowboy, but I think it's supposed to be Mandami. I'll get that pronunciation right. It says, stick him up. Looks like a cowboy with two guns in his hand. Is Mayor Mandami threatens Hochul. Raise taxes or else. And it says down below in the regular article, Mandami threatens to raise the city's property tax if Governor Kathy Hochul and Albany doesn't raise taxes on corporations and wealthy New Yorkers. That would be statewide. It was revealed on Sunday that a major Wall Street firm, okay, here we go, Apollo Global Management, a $900 billion asset manager, is plotting a second U.S. headquarters in the Sun Belt as Mandani pushes to hike taxes on deep-pocketed corporations. That seems to be the Democrat way. Tax the rich more and more and more. And, of course, California has been thinking about having a basically an asset tax, which is a great departure and maybe illegal. I was listening to that on Fox News station today, and I think I've said that before in this program. They want to tax your property, your assets. If you own a house, even though it's not income, and even if it's just sitting there, they want to tax what it's worth if you earn over a certain amount. Now, at the moment in California, I think it was $1 billion. But you know how that goes. When I was a boy, Massachusetts had never had sales tax. And finally, they decided they'd have a sales tax. And I forget the percent at the time, but it seems to me, and now, of course, I've been out of that state for many years, seems to me it was lower than the present, which I think is 6%. And because the proponents made all these claims, we will never tax food of any kind. We will never tax clothing. Well, I kind of think that they're taxing both of those right now. Maybe not food staples, meat and potatoes, but I got touch anything. If they're considered luxury foods, potato chips and snacks and stuff, I'll bet you they tax them. Don't know for sure, though. I have to admit that. Well, I see how time is flying. It's a good day. Let me see if there's anything else here that really needs to be said. A lot of this is statistics, which is kind of boring. It shows a picture of Bernie Sanders, a mentor of Mandani, speaking at a rally at Lehman College in the Bronx, calling on Hochul to raise taxes on the wealthy. That was March 29th, that rally was held. But Hochul's office said Monday she remains opposed to such increases as she seeks re-election. No wonder she's opposed to it. For a second full four-year term. She worries about businesses as well as wealthy New Yorkers who pay a disproportionate share of income taxes fleeing the city. All right, well, that gives you the general idea. If you want to read more, you just got to go to the New York Post. The article that says New York Dems pushing to raise corporate tax, dated March 30th. Also, as I'm recording that, that was just yesterday. So that's pretty current. Well, a couple of other articles we have here. Seems like, again, there was something I was going to add to that, but it has flown away from my mind. So we'll just have to save that for another time. Well, I did hear another state, but I can't remember which one now, was toying with the idea of having a tax on millionaires. Now, it's one thing for billionaires, quite another thing for millionaires. If you live in a city like New York City and you earn over $1 million. That's not really that much when you rent maybe $10,000 a month. I don't know if it's quite that much, but it's pretty sizable for downtown Manhattan. If you're a business, unless you own the building, you got to pay that. If they are continuing to do these things, they're going to drive all the people to get out of those states, and that's already happening. California is losing population. They're all going to Texas, where the taxes are low, the regulations are not as strict on businesses, and some of these regulations can put a business out of the business, even a good one. Well, back to Fox News. New Jersey school district's secretive transgender policy faces legal threat of bucking Supreme Court ruling. Thomas More Society's Peter Green warns the New Jersey district will not be the last to face legal pressure over parental notification policies. This, as I said, was from Fox News by Ashley Oliver. March 30th, 2026. John L. Daco, a detransitioner suing her medical providers in Texas, details how her nightmare began with online chat rooms and cosplay. I don't even know what that is. C-O-S-P-L-A-Y. It's in quotation marks, whatever it is. That was kind of an introductory subtitle. A New Jersey school district is being threatened with legal action unless it repeals a policy to let schools withhold students' gender identity information from parents, setting up what could become an early test of the Supreme Court's recent intervention in the fight over parental rights and school disclosure rules. The Thomas More Society, a conservative legal group, accused the Westwood Regional School District in a demand letter of wrongfully maintaining the policy, which also allows the schools, in some cases, to aid K-12 students, quote, social transition, unquote, to become transgender without their parents' knowledge. The move comes weeks after the Supreme Court dealt a major victory to conservative parents in Mirabelli versus Bonta by holding an injunction against a similar policy in California. And this is a quote, I had hoped this would end the practice of secret gender transitions. But what's becoming clear to us is this is just the beginning, said Peter Breen, Thomas More Society Executive Vice President, as he spoke with Fox News Digital. He went on to say, this is not an end, but a beginning of a big win in the Supreme Court. We are already fielding requests from other parents across the country, and we anticipate sending a lot more demand letters, unfortunately, unquote. Fox News Digital reached out to the school district board members who received the letter, as well as the district superintendent, for comment, but did not receive responses. The school board told the local media earlier in March that members were insulting with district council and reviewing policies. A letter requires the New Jersey School District to repeal its policies, called Policy 5756, within 20 days. Otherwise, Breen said, the Thomas More Society would follow the same path it did in California and begin litigation. And Breen continued, when the Supreme Court decides a case, the logic of the decision is binding on every other court in the country, federal or state. And so the Supreme Court has said that parents have a fundamental right to control the upbringing and education of their children. And so a school district or official who denies that right could be subject individually to a lawsuit, not just the school district. In Mirabelli, California, parents and teachers argued that the state's transgender policy violated their rights under the First and 14th Amendments. The policy prevented school administrators from telling parents about their child's potential efforts to transition their gender unless the child consented to it. It also required school staff to use students' preferred names and pronouns, regardless of the parents' wishes. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit sided with Democrat Attorney General Rob Bonter in the case, leading the parents and teachers to turn to the Supreme Court. The High Court vacated the Ninth Circuit's order 6-3 on an expedited and temporary basis while the case proceeds through the lower courts. The three liberal justices dissented. The High Court's majority wrote in the unsigned opinion, quote, "The state argues that its policies advance a compelling interest in student safety and privacy. But those policies cut out the primary protection of protectors of children's best interests, their parents," unquote. Cory DeAngelis, a research fellow at the Conservative Heritage Foundation, observed to Fox News Digital at the time that the Supreme Court decision was the latest in a string of victories for conservatives seeking to tighten policies surrounding transgender people. DeAngelis noted, "It only applied to California despite its anticipated impact on other states." DeAngelis said, quote, "This precedent is surely a sign of good things to come. If there's a lawsuit that arises in another state, you can be pretty sure that the Supreme Court is going to rule on the side of families," unquote. The Supreme Court has weighed in recently on several key gender identity disputes through full opinions and emergency orders, and the decisions have broken along ideological lines. Outside Mirabelli, the High Court in the United States versus Scametti affirmed 6-3 a state's authority to ban certain transgender medical treatment for minors under the Equal Protection Clause. In a 6-3 emergency ruling last year, the justices temporarily greenlit President Donald Trump's ban on transgender service members serving in the military. The High Court is also weighing two relevant and closely watched cases, one on a religious-based therapist offering alternative counseling to transgender youth, and one on transgender athletes. Decisions on those are expected by this summer. Interesting case. Reported on Fox News, March 30th. I think I mentioned the author's name was Ashley Oliver. Once again, if you'd like to write to me, we'd love to hear from you. You can write to Lou Caroline, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Caroline, Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And don't forget to listen every Thursday evening at 8 on 4.840 if you have a short wave, or simply by going to WWCR.com, Worldwide Christian Radio. And if you missed the Thursday evening program, and I've had to miss it a few times lately because I had other obligations, church obligations, you can hear it Saturday morning at 8 a.m. All times are Eastern Daylight Savings Time. That frequency in the Saturday morning is 7.490 megahertz. If you go to my website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, you can find the complete information on how to listen to the program in all kinds of different venues. Well, we have just about 3 minutes left. You may remember, a couple of months ago, a young lady was stabbed to death by a criminal on a train in North Carolina. Now, I'll have to summarize this one. This came from the New York Post by Luke Cassiano, March 30th. Providence mayor calls mural of the Ukrainian refugee Irina Zarutska divisive after train stabbing death. The gist of this is that they were putting up a mural in memory of this young lady. The mural was half done, and the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, the capital city, is calling the mural that is backed by Elon Musk, by the way, to honor this young lady, Irina. He's calling this divisive and saying it should be taken down. Now, this is the kind of extremism that you get from some of these left whackers. Just because they have a mural in memory of a sweet young lady, he says it's divisive. And it says the mural located on the exterior of the Dark Lady and LGBTQ plus club in downtown Providence remains incomplete, WJAR-TV report. And the mayor wants it taken down. He says the murder of the individual depicted in this mural was a devastating tragedy, but the misguided, isolating intent of those funding murals like the one across the county is divisive and does not represent Providence, Mayor Smiley said in a statement. Well, it might be that Mayor Smiley doesn't represent Providence. This is the kind of thing. Now, this is an LGBTQ club. But how can you say it's a right-wing conspiracy type thing to have this mural? The artist, Ian Bagrow, who began the work last week, told the news outlet that he never intended for the tribute to be political. Well, I think things have gotten extreme, to say the least. But our time is up. I want to thank you all for listening tonight, and I invite you to tune in again next week. Once again, you can write to me, Luke Cavalli, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Thank you so much for listening. Good night.